Well, one of the most dispiriting things you could possibly see is a group of youngsters all hanging out together, and instead of having a conversation amongst themselves, you know it, they're all looking down at a phone, totally disengaged from one another. Maybe occasionally one of them will grab an Instagram reel and show it to their friend, and that's how many youngsters are sort of interacting these days, and it's incredibly dispiriting. And I'm sure you've seen on X the people sharing videos from the 1990s of what high school used to look like. All of these happy kids running around their high school, no one using a cell phone, just enjoying life, having conversations, being kids. So what really is the digital world doing to our brains? What are cell phones doing to our children? Well, fortunately, we've got a great guest. Dr. Eugene Lipoff is the author of Digital Brain Rot, Doom Scrolling, Get Your Brain Back. That's a new book out, and of course, he's done a lot of research on digital PTSD. Doctor, welcome to the show. Great to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. So maybe we can just start at a high level. I want to get into all of the nitty-gritty details today on this show. And I hope that maybe this episode can be an episode that people will share far and wide with loved ones and their family, sort of a template for people to say, see, this is what this is doing. And I want to go into some real data today. But why did you decide to tackle this subject in your research? Like, what was the catalyst for you?
Fair enough. Well, if I may, let me give you my background and you'll see how it evolved. It is a superb question because I've never really been that interested in social media and stuff like that. I certainly have not partaken that much personally in it. I've had people help me with it, but myself, I really don't find it that, I don't have much of a pull toward it. So for the last 20 years, I've been working in treating people as trauma, emotional trauma, what people like to call PTSD, term I dislike. I came up with a treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. It's called stellate ganglion block. It's a procedure that's been done for a century. And then basically, I was able to adopt it to treat PTSD, and we've had a lot of really good success. So in the process of doing that, I've learned a lot about neuroscience. I went to medical school, so I'm a physician, and then anesthesiologist, pain physician. So typically people like myself don't really deal with psychiatric issues. We deal with, you know, like trauma or pain, things like that. So about approximately 9 months ago, you asked for the catalyst. So my son, who's now 23, basically came home and he said, you know, this digital media thing is really bad for me. I want to start building Legos. I was like, what? 23 years old. Year old. I said, that's kind of, I've been trying to tell him to knock off the media because it's taking it away. You know, I'd like him to be outside doing experiences, normal things that I've done as a kid. And he says, no, you don't understand the video games and the social media and Instagram and all of this. And then he comes in and he says, you know, I want to start building Legos and start building big Legos. We're talking about 7,000 pieces, like big starships. So I was really encouraged by that. I thought it was really great. Then I was reading a Substack article, and they talked about, it's called mimetic disease. Basically, when you watch something on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, people started to develop psychiatric disease just by watching memes, which to me was like a weird concept. It's like, you know, I didn't realize you could catch a psychiatric disease, so to speak, from watching something. So then I was like, So to me, all psychology and psychiatry is biology, meaning there's a biological explanation, or you should be able to figure out a biological explanation for a psychiatric condition. That's kind of my perspective, because I have a biological treatment for PTSD. Kind of makes sense. Anyway, so I started looking at mimetic disease. So one of the classic mimetic disease that have been reported on was during COVID, where they had women that were doing TikTok, watching TikTok and Instagram, I think more TikTok, and they start to develop Tourette syndrome. It's like so weird, right? So basically what happens is women started presenting to the emergency room with Tourette syndrome. in their 20s. Typically, Tourette syndrome is usually males and younger. So the searchers went back and they found the commonality was that they were on TikTok. So when people are watching the hosts that had TikTok syndrome and they start emulating them subconsciously, and there was actually a brain change. So they're thinking there is a functional change in the brain, meaning you can actually develop symptoms like that. And eventually watching somebody do something repetitively changes your brain. That once I read about that and I thought, whoa, that's another level altogether, right? So that's how I got into it, and I start actually evaluating, and I start, turns out there's a whole literature about what happens to the brain when somebody uses social media excessively, such as, here's two specific things which are the most impressive to me. The more you use social media, so the more TikTok, whatever, people call it doom scrolling, basically scrolling half an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours a day, the more you do, the more there is a brain change seen in MRI, that brain actually shrinks. Now, that's
for how long?
Point.
The brain is shrinking over what period of time?
Well, it took months at least, and it could come back if you stop. But if you continue doing it, theoretically, your brain will continue to shrink. This is still relatively new science.
Wow.
But just the mere fact that the brain actually is shrinking is a very bad sign.
Yeah. Right?
And we're talking about
only over a month?
Or a couple of months.
Still.
So the point is, just the mere fact that that could happen, if you think about what that means, that means long-term use of social media can actually damage your brain. At least that's what the current studies are showing. It's not definitive. You know, there's going to be disclaimer. It's going to take time to figure it out. But there is definitely MRI changes which are noticed, which are proportional to severity of use of social media. That, to me, that's a huge thing. That's why I start investigating it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just blown away. I mean, think about like alcohol use or some other, you know, something that takes a long time in your body. You know, maybe you're addicted to sugar. You know, it takes maybe years of buildup to cause the problems, or prolonged use of alcohol for years leads
right.
to cirrhosis of the liver and maybe links to the, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia and whatever else, God knows. But it's always over like a long period of time.
But this is young people. We're not talking about people in their 40s and 50s. This is
right. 20s. But I guess what I'm saying is, where the brain is most resilient in a young person, we're seeing this data within a short amount of time, just a month, right. maybe to a few months.
Well, it should be. But let me tell you why it happens, and you'll see what actually the mechanics are. I always like to look under the hood, right? I mean, why would that happen? So the big thing, for example, just going back to stuff I know a lot about, is PTSD. So when somebody has PTSD, 20, 30-year-old guys come back and their brain is also shrinking, right? From PTSD, no head injury, just emotional trauma. What happens is when somebody is exposed to severe stress, poof, battle, right? Or rape or something horrible, what happens is sympathetic nervous system gets kicked on and stays on, fight and flight nervous system. When you watch 10, 12 hours of doom scrolling, think what happens. Every one of those little outrages or whatever, just a little drop. But if you have 100 to 500 of those per day, fight and flight system is being overactivated. When you activate sympathetic nervous system, it increases inflammation. That's been shown a number of times. So inflammation actually injures the brain. And there's also a substance produced called glutamate, which is neurotoxic, actually can chew up the brain. The other thing is, if you think about it, when people doom scroll, they can't sleep. Because when you look at the phone, the light hits your eye. Blue glasses, no blue glasses, still light hitting your eye. Suppress melatonin. Melatonin is what keeps you asleep. And you're also thinking, oh my God, look at all the stuff going on. You know, I need to see another thing. Oh, I don't know what's going on. if I put a post on, does somebody like the post? I mean, didn't like the post, whatever, all of that. So if you don't sleep enough, what happens is inflammation increases. That's been shown as well. So then when there is inflammation in the body, so interleukin 6 is one of the transmitters of inflammation, enters the brain, makes you depressed, can make the brain shrink, right? And then what's interesting is that the more doom scrolling people do, the higher the chance of suicidal attempts the next day. Part of the reason it happens is because the brain is inflamed. So this is a biologic change that our phones are doing, right? That's kind of my focus. That's the focus what I've been looking at.
Are you seeing a correlation between that and the number of increased suicides?
There was a study like that, yes.
Wow.
And if you look at the suicide numbers now, like 9 and 12-year-olds, they're the highest it's ever been.
9 and 12-year-olds? 9 to 12-year-olds?
Right. You'd think that wouldn't be, right?
And between that age group, is there a clear line to social media?
Well, devices. I mean, devices, that's right. Part of it. It's not the only contributor. But if you look at like an adolescence in the 20s, I think there was at least one study that shows that if the more doom scrolling, I have a reference in the book, the more doom scrolling, the more chance of suicidal ideation or think about suicide, maybe attempt. So that's starting to come online. The other thing that happens, if you're always on very short videos, especially TikTok, you don't have attention. So now we're talking about attention deficit economy, right? So everybody's trying to get our attention, you know, bigger, more colorful. If you look at, like, for example, my background, it's very non-stimulating, right? Black, white, I mean, that's what I've really, since I talk about it, I'm trying to be consistent. I'm talking the talk, walking the walk. The point is you want to reduce stimulation, digital stimulation.
So I want to pause there, Doctor. I want to dive more deeply into this short content and see if you can maybe pull out some statistics on this, because sure, that is really where I see the biggest trouble. And I tell my kids all the time, no shorts, no shorts, no shorts. So we'll see if that's valid or not. And I want to hear more about this short content when we come back. So we'll get back to Dr. Lipoff in a second. But first, the stock market has been on an incredible run. And, you know, instead of like sitting there looking at your phone and like watching YouTube shorts or scrolling TikTok or social media, you know, that's causing this brain rot, imagine like you're actually investing. You're in the investor class and you're studying how to start to build wealth. And I bet a lot of you like watching today, there's a little voice in the back of your mind saying, can this really keep going? Can these rallies keep going in the markets? Like, what's going on? We've got diesel price news today, highest I think it's ever been. And of course, Iran threatening like, hey, Americans, you better stock up on fuel right now, because if you keep doing this, things are going to get very, very bad. So all of this to say right now, you need to be protecting your family. Nobody knows when the next downturn is going to happen, but we do know one thing. Markets move in cycles. They don't go up forever. They never have. And when those cycles change, they change very quickly. So that's why smart investors don't wait until headlines turn negative. They make their moves while the market is still strong. Ray Dalio saying that every American right now should have a huge portion of their portfolio, like 10-15% in gold, silver, in precious metals. One option to do this is a gold IRA from our friends at Lear Capital. You heard me talk about it. I have one. So does Natalie. Even our children have gold IRAs. It lets you add physical gold or silver to your retirement savings, giving you another way to diversify and prepare for what comes next. Could be the time right now to start thinking about protection, not just profits. Lear Capital is a company that Natalie and I trust with more than $3 billion in transactions. They are the best in the business. I strongly urge you to give Lear 10 minutes on the phone and they'll show you the options. It's totally free. All you need to do right now is just text the word news, text the word news to 43343 to get your free gold IRA guide. It could change your life. Again, check them out right now. Text the word news to 43343. All right, we're back with Dr. Lipoff. and his research around digital doom scrolling and digital toxicity in our brains, what social media, what short form content is actually doing to us. You know, maybe before we get there, you know, the idea is, and I don't want to be a Luddite, like I love technology, I've always loved it, but you know, I used to be a tech reporter back in the day, so I have an affinity for it. I understand there's a piece of it in our lives that's important. But at the same time, I also don't want to be like the, you know, Tipper Gore, like rap music is killing our kids, whatever it is. You know, I don't want to be get off my lawn. I'm an old guy with some of these things. But I just have this instinct about short content. And I saw it myself during COVID. I downloaded TikTok for the first time during COVID and was just like, I was sitting there and I'll never forget. I was sitting in an uncomfortable chair for like an hour and a half. And I was just sucked into it. Like I'd never been sucked into social media before. And I was just sucked into this like short form content. I was just like scrolling and then swiping and then watching for a few seconds and then a little dopamine hitting. And before I knew it, like an hour and a half had passed and I couldn't feel my legs sitting in this uncomfortable chair. And I said, what am I doing? And I did a few days of that or a few weeks of that actually. And then finally I was like, this is awful. And I just deleted TikTok. I was like, this is awful. Like, what am I doing to myself? Anyway, short content. I'll let you have the floor here. What do we know about it?
Well, what's interesting is this interesting that we're talking now. This has only been last week. There was a settlement with Meta, $17 billion. So the lawsuit was against Meta. Basically, the intent of the suit is saying that Meta is designed to be addictive, or Instagram and Facebook is designed to be addictive. That was basically the lawsuit about. So there was a settlement for $17 billion. They didn't admit guilt, but you know, it's a settlement, kind of tells you where everything is at. So it's very clear that if you have really short, like shorts, right? You're talking about 30 seconds, under a minute. It moves very quickly and it's designed to chase you around. So, for example, if you like this, there is algorithms, there is some massive computer that's worth billions of dollars. They can figure out more than what you would like to see than you can figure it out. And the reason you were so uncomfortable in the chair is because the algorithm took you for a ride. Algorithm basically said, okay, this guy likes this. Okay, we're going to take him this way. We got to take him this way. We're going to take him this way. And you were not in charge. The algorithm was in charge. So if you look at various TikTok content or various content of shorts, TikTok, there's a number of lawsuits pending about TikTok. But if you look at the research, which one is going to be the worst? You think which one is the most addictive of all of the shorts? What do you think? If you have a choice of Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, I mean, there's other ones, obviously. Which ones do you think is the most addictive?
Because I remember a few years ago hearing that TikTok was, at the time, seemed like it was the most addictive. They had really nailed the algorithm. It still is.
Yeah, the most predictive algorithm. The algorithms are the most predictive. So,
and what do you mean predictive? Because what you said was really interesting. It's designed to chase you around.
Yeah. So basically, if you like to see a kitten that's very sweet, little kitten with the right music, the next thing you're going to see is similar kitten, maybe different scenario, and just very fast. If you don't like that particular kitten and you switch, two things. One, it's going to give you choices, which is great. Everybody wants a choice. But it learns like that particular kitten was the wrong color or the wrong size or doing something different. So it's very quickly learning it. And at almost instantaneously, it feeds you back the information you want. The idea, all the companies make money if you stay on a platform longer. The longer you stay on a platform, the more money they make. And we're talking about billions of dollars, of course. So TikTok is the most efficient because if you think about what it does, you have motion, you have color, and it's designed for you. So you can be in a trance. You're basically in a trance. If you're just sitting in the chair, even though you're uncomfortable, you didn't feel anything. It's like being anesthetized, right? In a certain way, you're anesthetized.
You kind of come out, you almost have like an out of body experience. And I didn't like it at all. And
But you know
maybe
why
you
that
could.
is? Think about it. Because if you have, we were designed to go one thing at a time, right? One thing at a time. If you're walking around the jungle, you're looking for predators, whatever. But you're not seeing 25 different things going at once, all at once, right? So you're asking the brain. So if you think of a brain working like a car engine. So let's say when it's idling, when it's just sitting around doing nothing, it's 2000 RPMs. If you accelerate to get in the highway, 8,000 RPMs. But if you're sitting in the parking lot and you put a neutral and you keep revving it at 15,000 RPMs continuously, you're going to be groggy because think about it, it's a machine, right? Not to oversimplify, but it burns three things: water, oxygen, glucose, right? There's byproducts anytime you burn something. All those byproducts accumulate in the brain. The only way to get it out of your brain, you need to be in deep sleep. If you are scrolling, you're not getting deep sleep. But your brain was what the reason that you were groggy was because the brain was revving too fast. You didn't have a chance to catch up, and you can't really focus, right? And you do it if you do it over time, like significant amount of time, that becomes a problem. Because now your brain, the part of the brain that's usually his methodical thinking, can't really do it because it can't focus, and your brain learns, right? So if it's used to continuous stimulation, you need to take a lot of dopamine, right? So your dopamine now, in order to create the next dopamine hit, you need to do something more and more and more and more. And that's why people get like despondent because they don't get the hit anymore. You become tolerant. Make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And so it's almost like feeding you in a way. Is it almost like you need it to sustain? And when you remove it, I bet there's almost like a withdrawal period too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So to me, keep in mind, I did 40 years of being a pain doc, right? So I'm used to opioids. So when you give somebody opioids because I have back pain, opioids being narcotics. Not heroin, but codeine, Tylenol number three, all of those things. You take it away, people don't feel particularly good, right? There is a physical withdrawal, one, but there's also a mental withdrawal because you were calm. Now you're like cranky. And it's similar. When you take away the phone, what happens? The soothing this was providing for you. Because a lot of people are like, they come back. I talk to a lot of Gen Zs. I've interviewed a bunch of guys or women also. And turns out when they don't, they just pick up the phone automatically. And when they had a long day, it's like, okay, I'm going to give myself only an hour of scrolling. This is going to really calm me down, right? So it's 3 hours later, they're still at it. So it's a binky. So to me, this is just a binky.
Right, the idea that it's going to calm you down, you have a few minutes here, you're in waiting in line, you're waiting for the DMV appointment
Right.
instead of bringing a book with you, just instead of reading some pamphlets or a magazine that's in the lobby, everyone reaches for their phone, and then I always see them. They're always like on Instagram Reels or whatever, TikTok, and they're just swiping through, whether you're on a bus or otherwise. Young people, I just see them swiping. So they're not even just like looking around, looking out the window, just relaxing. But
That's totally true.
they're thinking that it's relaxing them, but it's doing the opposite.
Well, it's keeping you occupied, right? So one of the things I was interviewing a world wrestler. He was a world champion arm wrestling, Devon. So he talks about. So he and I talked about digital toxicity. This is special operations, 50-year-old guy, brilliant, and arm wrestling champion, global, right? So he talked about. How do you deal with boredom? Can you live with boredom? So in our society, we forgot how to live with boredom. boredom, just sitting around doing nothing, not being distracted. It's amazing. There is a network in the brain, cellular network, that specifically helps you be bored. Boring is great, but since we have a phone, we never want to get to boredom. In fact, I was a victim of it myself. I was listening to audiobooks all the time, and then I read, some kind of post or somewhere. Basically, they're saying every time you, why don't you just stay bored? All the good ideas come when you're bored. No,
Right.
nobody's telling you what to do. You're actually coming up as concept. And I've started to become, I'm pretty creative. I became more creative, which is great because you're not always absorbing information. You should be making information in your head.
This is fascinating. We said to my 9-year-old, she'll say, "I'm bored." And my wife and I
Aww.
will say, "Great. That's great." Instead of reaching for an iPad or reaching for some sort of a something. Maybe she'll go and draw something or work on making like friendship bracelets or something, right? So this idea of being bored, how much time do we need to be bored? Like, 'cause you talk about these ideas that come to you. Think about Steve Jobs would say, "Come take a walk with me," or "take a walk," or
Right.
Einstein would talk about just taking a walk with no distractions, but that's where his greatest ideas would come from, is from taking a walk. But not having an audiobook in your ears,
That's
right?
exactly right. So, well, how much boring? I mean, as much as you can get. In our society, it's kind of hard to do it because you have to plug in. But here, I do have a question for you. So, how do you work with your 9-year-old? I assume it's daughter, right? It's
Yeah.
a 9-year-old daughter. So, which is what is your response as a parent when they say, "I'm bored"? It's like, go do something else. Do you guide them, or do they have books? Do they have prepared? Do they have Legos? What do you do with it?
It's a great question. I think it always comes when she's sort of like waiting for her friend, our neighbor, to get home from school. So she's like waiting for her friend to go play or something like that, And so there are these periods where she knows she can't just jump on and have a conversation, like a text conversation on an iPad with a friend, So she's sort of in this like in between space. And so she'll say, "I'm bored." And my wife and I will say, "Great." And we just let her sort of flop around on the couch and just let her sort of just like lay there. And, I don't know that I force her to do anything like, "Hey, go draw, go." I just sort of say, "That's great. It's great to be bored." And my wife will say
So
the same thing.
I'd like to give you a suggestion.
Please.
Doesn't mean it's the right suggestion. Keep in mind, I'm not a psychiatrist, nor am I a
Yeah.
psychologist.
And bear in mind, we've had two older kids now too. So this is our third and our youngest. So the ship has sailed on the older ones. But yeah, please give us
How
your help.
old are your oldest? How old is your other two children?
16 and 14.
So the problem is alpha generation, and we'll talk about that's a very specific generation, 16 and younger. They're under very different pressure than older. Because this is a first generation, they actually come of age not knowing what it's like not to have a smartphone. That's the first generation ever. Gen Zs kind of had both. No smartphones and then smartphones. But alpha is truly, purely born in that culture. My only suggestion is, when you guys as a family have a meeting, you always talk about things, I'm sure. Have things laid out that she picked. Just say, "Hey, what would you want to do? That's not, phone is not an option. Texting is not an option. What can you do that you really enjoy? Would it be nice to have some Play-Doh? Would it be nice to have some Legos? Would it be nice to have something to paint? Nothing digital. If I gave you a choice of three things, what would you pick?" And what I find, no matter the age, I take care of children as young as 8 and stuff I do for PTSD. Agency. If you give children agency and treat them like adults, it's amazing what you can do. It's like, what would you like to have? So they're prepared. It's like preparedness. Like, how do we get out of the house, right? The same thing here. What would you like to pick? And then the whole act of figuring out what it is, shopping for it, to Myers, whatever, having. Then they go, "Oh, remember this whole interaction." But giving children agency is a pretty powerful thing because they're too young to figure out something for themselves a lot of times. But if we give them the agency, they get self-control.
It
grows
it.
Prefrontal cortex.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, and there's sometimes we'll say, do you want to, you know, go play with your, she makes her own slime and squishies out
that's
of like
cool.
balloons cool. and she fills it with things. And so she has a whole art table in the basement that she is covered
in. Oh, that's
great.
Paint, exactly. You know? But my point is, instead of you directing it, she's directing it.
Yeah.
And no, she has great. The choice to have something in it. As opposed to when you lay out this, you know, when you go, my analogy to that is if you lay out this great feast, there's always something that's not there that they really want.
Right, right.
If you go shopping with them and they have a problem, it's like, you were there, too bad.
Right, right, exactly.
Agency. It's all about agency to me.
I love that. So, Doctor, stay right there. I want to take a quick pause. When we come back, I want to talk about what it's doing to our memory, what it's doing to our sleep, what it's doing to our anxiety levels, what it's just all of that, what it's doing to our relationships. So let's cover a lot of those details, being on social media, watching shorts content and all of that. We'll be right back. We'll get back to that in just a second. But first, think about your family group chats, like what passes through your family group chats. We were just traveling this past weekend, and oh my gosh, the family group chats just off the charts, going back and forth. Vacation plans, school pickups, photos of your children. Hey, how's everyone doing with their back to school time? All of it. And you trust the people in that group, of course, but how much should you have trust the company that's operating the app that you're sending these group chats in, right? Think about that. And that's where Keet gives families another option. It's a free messaging and video calling app built peer-to-peer with end-to-end encryption, no centralized company database holding family conversations and family photos and all of that. Keet doesn't track metadata. Nobody needs to provide a phone number or email to join Keet. You can create a family group, share files, photos, make your audio or video calls, all without turning your home life into another corporate data profile. So visit keet.io/redacted. That's keet.io/redacted, keet.io/redacted. Download it for free. Invite one person that you trust and start a conversation that belongs to you. All right, we're back with Dr. Lipoff to talk about doom scrolling and social media. So before we get into some of those details, sleeping, anxiety, all of that, do you notice a big difference specifically between short-form content and long-form? So let's say someone's sitting down on the couch and they're going to put on an hour-long interview. They're going to watch you and I for an hour discussing this topic. Is that totally different than these sort of short little dopamine hits that they're getting from like TikTok or Instagram reels and things?
Yeah, biologically, it's totally different. It's not
totally
different than watching a movie, from my perspective. Well, let me give you three reasons it's different. Number one, it's long by definition. So long means you have to pay attention. It means a part of the brain that keeps attention, it continues, needs to work. You need to remember, if you don't remember for the first 15 minutes, now halfway into it, let's say 30 minutes, then why are you even watching alone? That's a problem. But if you remember the whole thing, your memory could function normally. That is number two, the algorithm is not chasing you around. You turn it on, and now you're just watching it. It's not giving you, if you like this, let's pick this. If you like this, if you like this. No. You're going to watch the whole episode. Now, hopefully, you and I are not boring enough that people have switched through the program already, but you know, that's what happens. But the point is, if somebody can sit there for an hour and watch a interview, that's very different than every 30 seconds, the next topic, next topic. Also, we are not doing a lot of frills, right? There's not a lot of special effects going on. There's not a lot of colorful things flying across. If you look at most shorts, you need to have a hook, which is 3 seconds. It's like quick, right? Then you have the body, which is another 20 seconds, and then you have CTA. Now, I've done some of those, but mine are very low stimulating and factual, which is very different. But to compare and contrast long and short, absolutely, to me, it's totally, there's no difference in watching this and watching a movie. It's the same thing. It is a movie of a form.
Yeah, and you really do have to pay attention. There'll be times I'll be watching a long form interview, a long form, you know, education piece or a documentary on YouTube or something, and I'll pause it, have to go and deal with something, and I'll come back. Now I'm back right. in that headspace.
Right.
Click play, and I'm back to watching it again. And we're seeing, what's good is, I guess with YouTube, we're seeing like a rise in long form content that's more programmatic. So people are sitting on the couch, they have their Apple TV or they have, and they're watching like 2 hour long interviews on YouTube. And it's more of a sit back experience where they're treating it like they would a movie or a documentary.
Well, here's a cool thing to me. So this is what gives me hope. So my podcast, for example, is titled Brain Hope Reality. I'm big into hope. So there's a lot of gloom and doom, right? The great thing for me, Gen Z generation are really smart. What I mean by that, they have figured out, and my son is one of that generation, they have figured out this social media toxicity is existing and it's hurting them as a generation. And let me tell you how I know they are smart. One, up to 17% of Gen Zs have now switched from smartphones to dumb phones, flip phones. Right. I mean, how many kids you know that will go, well, this is a really cool device. Oh, sure, I'm going to take a lesser device. Oh, yeah, that doesn't sound like a kid or a young adult. Number two, up to 60 or 70% of people, Gen Zs, are interested or already bought a bricking app. Bricking app is app that will brick or remove a lot of the smartphone features from a smartphone. They're doing it, and they want to do it. Also, they're starting to read books. Oh my God, that's crazy.
Right.
The cool thing about books, it's easier to read than a screen. Right? It's easier in the eyes. It's much less processing in the brain because all of that stuff is moving and, you know, and you have scrolling here. A flat book is a different story. But the point is, they innately have already figured it out. Like, I don't have to teach them that. They know it's a bad thing for them. I've interviewed a lot of them, and they're really trying to deal with that, which is amazing.
Do you think, because, so I'm just wondering if that's sort of social, like where they're experiencing this, or it's biological, like where, I don't want to say there's an evolution, maybe that's a little extreme, but this idea that biologically, their bodies are almost rejecting smartphones. And they're saying, we don't want this in our life. Maybe it's not necessarily just like a social thing that they're doing when they go out to dinner, but they're actually physically just saying, I'm just wondering if there's like a biological reason for this pushback.
Well, that actually is a great question. So I interviewed a young lady who is 23. I interviewed her last week. The podcast will be out in about a week, I think. Anyway, so she's a Gen Z. She, I asked her that specific question. Like, why is Gen Z putting down the devices? What would be the reason for doing that? Is that social? Just because it's a cool thing to do? Or is that something else? She said, no, we feel bad. We don't sleep well. We feel groggy. We're not, it's also stealing our life. If you do 11 hours of doom scrolling per day, that's more than work or sleep, right? So is it biologic? Absolutely. If you think about it, let's focus on the term brain rot, if you don't mind. And I'll tell you that. By the way, that's my book, Digital Brain Rot. Isn't that beautiful?
Well, I love the title. I mean, this is because people throw that term around. Like, oh, right. It's giving you brain rot. And that's what I say to my kids. Like, make sure I don't want to see you on shorts. I don't want to see you on this. It's going to give you brain rot. And so even my 14-year-old, she'd be like, nah, daddy's going to say brain rot. Right. But it's a real thing. It actually
let's talk
is
about that for a
rotting
second.
Our brain. So, it's shrinking our brains.
It is rotting our brains. So I actually have a Substack that says brain rot is real. That's exactly, that was the impetus. So I think early 2000s, So there was a lot of gamers that played like through the night, like 20 hours, 30 hours, and they would come out really out of it. And they start calling brain rot. It's kind of cute. Ha ha. The thinking is nothing. This is a digital world. It's not real, right? Real world is totally separate from digital world. So I'm telling you, it's not. They're all connected. It's like, if you look at Matrix, they talk about like when Neo jumped off the building and landed, and he had blood in his mouth. That, it's like, why am I bleeding? This is not real. So, no, their mind makes it real. The mind can make it real in the sense that as you are watching all this stuff, your brain is revving and it's burning itself out. And you can't sleep because of that. So if you look at the anxiety rates in really young kids, like under 10, skyrocketing. Their mental function going down, a lot of it is secondary to sleep. And the question is, how reversible is it? The younger you are, the more reversible it will be. But the key point is to stop the exposure. So that actually leads me to the term that I'm trying to promote, digital toxicity. So there's a lot of terms out there now. Brain rot is one of them. Not a very scientific sounding brain term, right? Digital toxicity is, to me, is a way to say that there is digital problems or causing real world consequence. So if you look at UV light, for example, a little bit makes vitamin D. A lot, cancer, skin cancer. A little surfing, okay. A lot, no good. So, the other thing from a PTSD literature, in fact, I submitted an article that PTSD in digital PTSD, meaning you can have a lot of symptoms of PTSD from just scrolling, they have the same underlying condition, which is inflammation. So we could talk about that, which connects the sleep component to that.
Wow. Okay. So the digital toxicity, so a little bit. I mean, do we have a threshold, that, okay, we've been on here for 20 minutes. Now we're starting to see, now it's surfing the internet was fine for 20 minutes. You're just doing some research on maybe buying some, paintings for your house or maybe some new carpeting or whatever. And you're just kind of scrolling through IKEA's website or whatever it is.
That's different. That's not chasing you as much, right?
Okay.
But to give you a direct answer, so you basically would like a hard figure. It's like, 10 minutes, okay, 2 hours, not okay, 5 hours, bad. It depends. It's a complex question because it depends on a number of things. Number one, how sensitive are you to that? Then we can talk about genetics and what kind of genes you have from your parents. And your genes can actually change with exposure to stress. I wrote papers on that. So theoretically, actually, this is a potentially a big statement, but I can probably back it up. The exposure, extreme exposure to digital space, which with shorts, will change your DNA in a bad direction.
What?
And you can, worse yet, you can give it to the next generation. What do you think of that?
Watching shorts can actually change your DNA.
Potentially. I don't have proof of that. But I know if you look at the PTSD literature, that's a fact.
Wow.
And why do I say that? So PTSD, big event, right? Poof, battle, huge. But if you do doom scrolling for, let's say, a year, and every little click, click, click of, oh my God, there is like people being killed there. This is a horrible thing going on there. Fear, fear, fear. It'll do the same to your brain. So in many ways, it's like real PTSD if the real battle.
Wow.
And we do know continuous stress will change the DNA. We know that.
And so it's
And
not
it makes
just.
you age faster, right? That's another side effect of that.
Oh,
Age
geez.
faster and die younger. So our
So.
people, our kids who are 20 now, when it's going to be 45, 50, it's going to be very unpretty.
In what way are they aging? What way is the body aging as a result of this?
So again, this is a DNA literature and PTSD literature. I do not know. Digital PTSD, I have not studied it. Plus, it's not been long enough, right?
Right.
PTSD has been around as long as human beings been around. Romans used to call it the tremble
Well,
2,000
the
years ago.
term, as my wife likes to point out, the term PTSD is really just specific for Vietnam veterans, right? I mean, it's not.
Let me tell you the story. I've written chapters on this. So the first term I'm aware of is called the tremble, 2,000 years ago.
Right, the tremble.
That was, Romans. So then the first term for PTSD-like symptoms in a modern era was soldier's heart, Civil War.
Soldier's heart.
Right, that's what it was called. Because people looked faint and the heartbeat weird. That's how they defined it.
Right? And then World War I, shell shock.
Shell shock, battle fatigue, World War II, Vietnam syndrome. And then in 1980, PTSD came out.
1980, okay.
So one of the people who was part of that was Frank Ugbert. He's 87 now. He's my buddy, amazing psychiatrist. So he believes PTSD is a bad term because it's stigmatizing. So disorder is what's wrong with you. That's how he looks at it, and I do as well. The term he believes it should be is called PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury. Injury is what happened to you. When people talk about PTSD being an invisible wound, they're wrong. Because if you use a modern scanner, like functional MRI, PET scans, you can actually see PTSD. So it's real. It's a real thing, and it's possible to treat as a biological state. That's why I have my perspective, right? Hmm. So, but we could talk about PTSI forever. I did a TEDx talk on it in January of this year. But so let's talk about, so how's it aging? So what happens is when somebody is stressed, that inflammation occurs. Now the term people are using is inflow-aging. Inflammation and aging together, inflow-aging. And there are studies that show that when, let's say, special forces, which are severe battle, usually exposure, so when they're out in battle, their aging is faster than the general population. The way it's measured, it's called epigenetic clock. The best one's Harvard clock, called Grim Age, blah, blah, blah. We won't get into that. But the procedure I do for PTSD reversal, I was able to show that we could make those soldiers biologically less old by 3 years by treating PTSD. Isn't that interesting? So the point is, DNA wants to flip back to normal. We need to take the stress away. So the same thing I believe is happening now, but this is a pure theory. I cannot give art. I cannot. If anybody asks, like, what is your research? This is just projection from PTSD literature. The PTSD literature I know because I contribute to that. But the point is, if you're stressed out on a continuous basis, your chance of a heart attack is probably going to be twice as high.
So when we talk about Gen Z, it's really ages, according to my numbers here, ages 14 to 29 years old is roughly ages 14.
I think 16. 16 is the cutoff, I think.
16, okay. Yeah, close some enough. Researchers say 1997, a little bit older. Anyway, so I graduated high school in 1995. So
I did 76.
That's when I was born, 1976. So, but I'm able to put it down. I'm able to separate myself from it.
Right.
It's, I'm able to walk away from it. And I kind of have a sense that it's bad for me, but to your point, this younger generation, so younger than Gen Z, what generation now where you have these
alpha.
9-year-olds, alpha. Okay.
They're called alphas. Yeah.
And so they're being raised on these devices where they don't know what it's like to be bored, what it's like to just sit on a park bench, and just kind of stare at ducks or something like that. I mean, I'm being a little,
No, you're not wrong. But let me give you a real world example, which, by the way, my book has, there are chapters specifically, how Gen Zs, how the millennials doing with cell phones. I broke it down specifically by that so you can look into it. But I'll tell a real world example. So we live next to a beautiful lake, Lake Michigan. And then I saw this cute kid, one-year-old.
Not Lake America? Sorry.
I'm not going there.
I know. One of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry, I just had to get that joke.
Not going there. Fair enough. I know. I whatever. Anyway, moving on. So this cherubic kid, 1 year old, and the mother is walking with a stroller, right? Mm-hmm. By the lake. Beautiful lake. Beautiful, beautiful. Whatever name it is by. It's still beautiful. Anyway, the kid has a headset on, and the phone is screwed into his stroller. So she's walking him by the lake, and he is watching the phone. That is a terrible thing to do. That is a very terrible thing. And the reason people do that, they think they are helping the kid by keeping them calm. The problem is there's going to be a huge price to pay in the back end. Take away that phone, they're going to get quite violent and very upset because now they're addicted. Now, it's not like, yeah, right, we're not watching like Battlefield or anything like that. We're watching cute cartoons. But all you're doing is you're dripping dopamine to this kid. And the brain never have a chance to thin down. Because when a child, when you're walking by the lake, the motion will make him sleepy. They go to sleep. The other, another interesting fact, which happens to be a true fact, is that the brain can only grow at night. You need to be asleep. Not at night, but when you're asleep.
Yeah.
So kids sleep up to 12, 14 hours, right? They take more naps than adults, obviously. Part of the reason they're doing that, they're designed by nature to grow the brain. So if you don't sleep and you're being stimulated continuously by a phone, guess what? You don't sleep. You don't sleep, you don't grow your brain. So we're going to have a generation of people whose brain ain't so good.
I want to pause here. I want to come back and talk about memory and what it's actually doing to our brain. So get into the nitty-gritty of all of this. We're going to pause here for a second. We'll get back to the interview in just a second. But first, everyone's talking about those GLP-1s. I'm sure you see everyone talking about it. But what about supporting your body's own natural GLP-1 response without a prescription drug? That's what makes Pendulum Metabolic Daily so interesting. Pendulum Metabolic Daily is a science-backed probiotic designed to support your body's natural GLP-1 response. It'll help you feel fuller, longer, experience fewer cravings, make it easier to stay on track with your health goals. It was developed by PhD scientists from Harvard, Berkeley, and Stanford, and it's just one capsule a day. Just take one capsule a day with food. I've been taking it. Been taking it for the past about 45 days and absolutely love it. Some customers report fewer cravings, more energy in as little as a week, though individual results can vary. Of course, right now you can save up to 48% off your first order. PendulumLife.com/redacted. Give it a try. Again, that's PendulumLife.com/redacted to get almost half off today. You know, one of the things we talk about here on the show is owning real tangible assets, real estate, gold, silver, I mean, copper, right? Copper exploding over the past 24 hours. But all of these things have one thing in common. They are real and they act as an incredible hedge against inflation. I'm a big real estate investor. I have been for a number of years. And if you've been thinking about investing in real estate, but you're not sure where to begin, like I have no idea. There's all these online gurus. There's all these courses. I'm telling you, stop what you're doing and pay attention to what I'm about to tell you, okay? If you already own property or you want to build a portfolio and start building towards financial freedom, and if you're sitting there with your arms crossed, you're like, I don't need to know about this. I'm already smart enough, okay? Like, I was an idiot with money until my 30s, okay? I was wildly in debt, and I knew something had to change, and I had to go on an education quest to build financial education. I was an idiot with money growing up. Terrible. I was $75,000 in debt. I didn't know what I was doing. And until I started investing in real estate and I cracked the code and it changed my life. So and that worked for me. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll work for you, but you have to put the time in. And there's, I'm telling you, one way to do that. Every Thursday at noon Eastern, our partners over at Sidera Wealth, their team goes live to break down the real world strategies behind successful real estate investing. I've been working with them for more than a decade. They're incredible. They cover everything from purchasing your first investment property to building and managing a financially free portfolio. You'll hear practical financial tips. You're going to learn how to evaluate opportunities. There's no condescension at all. They are incredible people that will help you. Okay, I want you to take advantage of it. It's totally free. Why wouldn't you? So if you're thinking about it, maybe you already own a few properties, but you've kind of done it yourself or you whatever. They will show you how you can actually add to that portfolio. Or if you'd never invested before, they'll help you get started from ground zero. And that's really why we wanted to put these workshops together to help people. Okay, it's totally free. So go to sdirawealth.com/workshops. sdirawealth.com/workshops. Okay, to sign up. We have a few spots open for people, and you'll be able to ask questions live and really help you advance. So please check them out. sdirawealth.com/workshops. All right, we're back with Dr. Lipoff about the idea that chronic digital exposure and doom scrolling can affect reward processing in our brains, attention, sleep, emotional regulation, stress response. Like, there's nothing good. I can't really find anything good from it. I just want to throw my phone out the window. And I often think about it too. It's like, has our life become appreciably better since the iPhone came out, right? Like, you think about 2007, 2008, when the launch of the iPhone and the smartphone revolution, and we moved away from the BlackBerry, and we moved away from the flip phones and all of that. Has our life gotten better? And maybe, you know, you could say, oh, well, I can take videos of my cat more quickly. I can pull my phone out really fast and take a photo of my child really quickly because I don't have a big camera around my neck all the time. So now I have more photos and videos of my kids growing up. But what else? I can't really think of like another app on my iPhone that has like made my life any better at all. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a tremendous question. So let's break that down for a second, if you don't mind. Yeah. I think there's a couple assumptions you're making, which is not really quite warranted. You're assuming the phones were designed to make your life better.
That's a great point, right?
That's a big assumption, right?
Right.
So if you let's talk about that. So let's say before you had to navigate by maps. Oh, my God. You have to look at buildings to orient yourself, right? Then the brain was working. Now you replace that with a map function.
I hate that. Can I just pause here for a second? Because I've taught my son, now that he's driving, I said, please don't rely on GPS. I want you to pay attention to landmarks. Look at the trees. Look at this building. Pay attention to the park that you're going to pass on the right-hand side. And, you know, and I pride myself on something my dad taught me as a child growing up, which is if I go someplace one time and I'm paying attention, I can always get back there, whether it's 200 miles away or not. So I've always been good about that. But what happened is once I started relying on GPS, I lost that ability. And I moved to a new town, and maybe 50 or 60 times it took me to going to that location, the mall or the whatever it was, before I figured out actually how to get there on my own without using GPS. That's insanity. But I blame it specifically on GPS and the map and the digital maps instead of like relying on paper maps.
Right. So the question is, did that make it better for you or not? Is walking around, I wrote a non-Substack, the shopping mall in your pocket. So you have an impulse. Oh my God, I really need this. You whip out your phone, chick, you bought it. Do you really need that, whatever that is? Yes, maybe. Is that really absolutely important? No, impulse buying is probably not the best thing for most things. So that actually brings up a very good point. So during my multiple interviews with Gen Zs, so here's, I work with a lot of medical students. So one of the questions was, why don't you be part of the 17% and buy a flip phone, right? Whack all those. Don't do that. So being able to take a picture, yeah, okay. But all the other functionality, you can live without. And just said, no, I cannot. I cannot park. We have been forced into digital environment, whether you like it or not. Like if you don't have a cell phone, a smartphone, you cannot park. You cannot pay your tolls. You cannot do your banking. You are forced to do it. It's not an option. Like I said, so this world was not designed for you. It was designed for the way our society operates, which is we've been forced into the digital environment.
No, right? It's a really great point, because if you saw those ads a few months ago out of the UK where people are pushing back against the digital ID in the UK, and they're basically saying, look, if you are of a certain generation, you'll basically be debanked. You won't be able to take the metro. You won't be able to take the bus. If you don't have a modern digital ID tied to your smartphone, you're not going to be a part of society. And of course, for me, and what we cover here on our show all the time, is that that's part of the process. They want to control you. They want to have total control of your digital life, your banking, your surveillance, your tracking, all of that.
Well, it's not just digital life, right? Your life in general. But I mean, I'm not big into conspiracy theory, but if you follow it, this is where we're at. I mean,
it's not a conspiracy at all. It's happening. I mean, just look at it.
It's not conspiracy. It's actually going on. Exactly right.
And look what's happening at the border. We get rid of any kind of a physical border wall. Let's put up these surveillance cameras now, biometric scanning. When you go through the airport, the TSA, you'll see the little sign that says you're being biometrically scanned. You can try to opt out, but come on, who's doing that? So all of this is part of this process. Sorry to go off on a tangent, but this is one of my hot button issues. But so to be one of those 17%, it's very difficult. I mean, how are you going to?
Some of those people actually have both devices, and they have takes a lot of discipline and takes. So, I mean, there's a way to do it. So, for example, in Chicago, there's still kiosks. I can still go there, and I can still put a credit card, or you can work. I mean, if you really don't want to be part of a big city, you can be in a small city and walk around everywhere, take a bike everywhere. You can unplug, but overall population is not going to do that. Because how are you going to make money? You need to have a job. If you need to have a job, you need to get online. If you don't get online, you're not going to have a job, most likely.
Yeah.
Unless you're a dishwasher, maybe you can, but maybe you cannot. I don't know. But you see my point. Our society has now programmed us beautifully, and it's not like it's a choice. You like it, don't like it. It's like you don't have to participate. You don't have to eat either. Okay, right. Well, I kind of like to eat.
Well, you could live like I grew up in Pennsylvania. You know, you could live like the Amish, right? You don't have to have a car. You could use a horse and buggy. You could issue electricity and not use electricity. You could use oil lamps at nighttime. And by the way, have probably the longest life longevity in the United States of America, and the happy, probably I wouldn't be surprised, like the happiness scores for the Amish are like off the charts. Their life longevity.
I don't know that. Maybe.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. So I don't want to get too far afield. I do want to talk about memory, and I do want to talk about anxiety. So what happens to memory when we're consuming hundreds or thousands of pieces of information every day in these like little bite-sized kernels?
Well, so first of all, you need to remember there are two memories. So somewhere along the line, I'm going to write a book, Tale of Two Memories. So there is amygdala. Amygdala is a part of the memory that remembers emotional memory. Hippocampus is what remembers regular things, like a regular memory. So I'll give you an interesting experiment that was done so we know that's true. So I think it was done in Pennsylvania somewhere. And then this gentleman, this PhD, was working in institute where everybody had a short-term memory loss. So hippocampal infarcts. So they can meet the same person 20 times a day, and it's a new person every time to them. So they showed them happy movies, asked them 3 hours later, how do you feel? Happy. Why? No clue. Next day, they showed them sad movies. And how do you feel? Really sad. Why? Not a clue. The point is, emotional memory remembers it differently, right? It's a total different memory, different structure. The stuff I do decreases amygdala function, so that's why people calm down. But anyway, let's focus on the hippocampus. In order to remember something, you need to encode it, meaning you need to have information, you need to be able to focus. If you focus, then the information gets to hippocampus, and that's where you remember it. If you cannot focus, which was happened with the shorts, you cannot encode it correctly, number one. Number two, if you don't sleep, the byproducts of brain of thinking is remaining in the brain. Hippocampus cannot work. Also, if you have enough exposure to stress, it increases inflammation. Inflammation actually damages hippocampus. So the structure that makes a memory work is damaged. So blah, blah, blah. The more doom scrolling, the worse your memory should be, theoretically.
Wow.
I cannot give you an article that says that, but theoretically, that's what it should be. People with PTSD, their memories are bad because of everything I just described. So I'm projecting the same concept onto the digital PTSD, as I call it.
So, and especially before bedtime. So a lot of people sit in bed on their phones, doom scrolling for 15, 20, 30 minutes, watching little shorts content, and then they turn off the light and they go to bed. What is that doing to them?
Everything is bad. So there are a couple of things. So the most, besides, we forget about alpha generation for a second. So the most sensitive generation currently is Gen Z women. The reason women are more sensitive than men has been shown pretty consistently. Women have a tendency of comparing themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody puts up, let's say a woman puts up a post and somebody says, your dress looks terrible, that's bad. No response. It's like, oh my God, why didn't they respond? Or they say it's great, then they go, great. So there's always this judgment, self-judgment, other people's judgment. Men, I don't think, are sensitive to that. But the point is, so that actually gets into what can actually do about it. Like, I'm a clinician and I like to do something instead of just complaining about a problem, right? So number one, no phones in the bedroom. No phone activity 2 hours before you go to sleep. Why? Two reasons. Number one, melatonin is what makes you go to sleep. The more light in your eye, the less melatonin, the less sleepy you're going to be. But two, even if you were scrolling right up until you're going to sleep, it's like, oh my God, remember that there was a shooting next door or there was something like this happened. You're still thinking about it. You cannot go to sleep, right? So you need to stop that. Related to that, I have two specific recommendations, like what people should do today. Number one, well, connected to that, no phone in the bedroom. After 8 p.m., no phone. Two, use most common excuse why people keep the phone in the bedroom is they use it as an alarm clock. Mm-hmm. My recommendation is get an analog alarm clock that has handles on it. You cannot get addicted to that. Plus, if you have a phone next to you, oh, I just got to check this happened. It sucks you in. And there's a lot of light. Analog does not have the same kind of light. There's a little light on it. You can see dial, but that's about it. That's a great thing. The other thing, the other recommendation number two, so that you can buy for $15 on Amazon, analog clock. Beautiful. It has two little...
I grew up with it. I know it very well.
Right? It has yeah. Little bells.
Yeah.
So I have one now. Some Gen Zs and I opened up a company. It's called Right to Disconnect. So I have a analog clock, which has Right to Disconnect available on its face. So it reminds you, you have the right to disconnect from the phone. So number two things to do like now, I would say, if you have a problem with cell phone, which a lot of people do, turn to gray mode. So I have a couple of shorts up on my YouTube channel, how to actually do it. It takes 15 to 20 seconds. What it does, you can still do the same things on the phone, same scrolling, same everything, but it doesn't have the dopamine hook as much because color really gets your dopamine going. Mm-hmm. So those are two things. Grayscale, you can do it right now, costs you nothing. Two, buy analog clock, $15, something like that, and then leave the phone outside the bedroom.
Well, not to mention the EMF radiation, sleeping next to your head as well. Like, so get, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a secondary effect. We really don't know exactly what it does. And some people sleep with buds in the ears. I'm sure it's not good for the infection of the ears. I'm not sure. EMF, it hasn't been very clearly shown, right? I mean, the people have been talking about it, brain tumors and all of that. Shmaybe. We do know for a fact that doom scrolling is really bad for you. The radiation is still debated.
Yeah, I know. You're right about that. You're right. The jury's still out on that. And we'll see, I guess, once like 6G rolls out, like how bad it's going to be for people.
Well, when your brain starts blowing up every time you turn the phone on,
Right.
that's probably a bad thing.
I mean, I know RFK Jr. has said, direct correlation between phones up to your ears, up to the side of your head, and on phone calls. Like, don't let your children do phone calls like up to the side of their head. But most kids these days aren't even doing that. They're just doing FaceTime videos, So I don't know.
I don't know. The literature is soft from my perspective. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that. I've reviewed it in the book. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure Apple would love to suppress that information if they could. It's like Coca-Cola would love to tell you that sugar's okay too. So, we'll see.
I
We
don't
don't
know.
know, but I guess we do know how terrible this stuff is now for our children and doom scrolling and watching these shorts. It's
Well, the cool thing,
deep.
we can do something about it, right? It's education. That's why. So, if I may give you a quick summary. So, one, I think it's really, really important to remember that doom scrolling has a biological effect in the brain. You can argue how much it shrinks the brain, but it does to a certain extent. So, it's like how much you asked before, what is the safe dose? It's like how much arsenic do you want to take? A lot or medium? Or a little bit. A little
Right.
bit is probably not going to hurt you. A lot, you're going to be dead. So the point is dose dependent. The more you do, especially if you're sensitive, the worse it's going to be. And then you have control of it. You can park your phone in the garage. You could turn it into a gray machine. You can get a flip phone, right? Hang out with people who have similar minded, such as people go, hey, cell phones are bad. So when you go to dinner with them, everybody puts their phone in a head and they actually talk to each other. What a concept. It's not difficult to do. It just needs to be a priority.
No, you're right. You could get a flip phone and you could use your smartphone for just the banking or to
Right.
get into your car or your Metro Pass or something like that. You don't use it for anything else. You just use your flip phone in case you need to make a phone call.
It takes discipline. But again, it starts with wanting to do it. And I think Gen Zs are really teaching me that they're smart enough to realize it's bad for them and actually doing something about it.
Well, also Gen Z, and I know a lot of young people are getting rid of AirPods and they are going back to the analog plug into the USB-C port, the long, what do you call them? AirPods, not
Ports.
the earbuds, the ones on the cord,
Right.
the ones athletes are doing this. At my son's high school, all of the young people that they now don't use AirPods anymore, they're using the ones with the cords back again because they're
It's
worried
cool
about.
again.
Yeah, and they're even like the my friends my son's friend's baseball coach, all of the kids on the team, he's like, don't put that stuff near your head, so they're all moving away from it. So these kind of trends, I don't know. We'll see. I'm
I think it's
excited about
getting
it.
there. I really am pretty optimistic that people are going to figure it out because they're doing it on their own. What I'm trying to do with my book is to give the biological reason why, right? They know it makes them feel bad. The question is like, why? So the same thing as PTSD. I have been in the forefront of changing the name PTSD to PTSI because the whole concept that all psychiatric conditions actually biologic is a mind-blowing concept for most people, including physicians. Because people have really thought psychiatric things, they're really not real. They can snap out of it. I don't think so. Because there are actually brain changes you can actually see and examine, you can do something with it. You can understand it's a biological change. Once you realize it's happening to you, you don't want to damage, who wants to shrink their brains? Nobody does.
Well, doctor, final question. I'll get you out of here on this. We've been talking all about shrinking your brain. You mentioned that it's reversible. So if someone, goes cold turkey, cuts off the cell phone, goes to a flip phone, how long does it take for the brain to respond and come back to normal or better?
I don't know. But I'll tell you what you can do to make the brain grow. How's that?
Okay.
That's I know that. But the other part, I don't know. I don't have the studies. I don't think it's been done, but I don't know. So here's a couple. So number one thing that's been shown.
And I should point out, we're still young in this data. Like, we don't have a lot of years of this stuff yet. Right. So, and I appreciate you just being honest, not saying I know something I don't know. I don't know. Okay. So how do we grow our brain?
So number one way to do it is meditation. Meditation has been shown to grow brain tissue back, which is great. Number one. Number two, get sleep. The more sleep you get, the more you restore your brain. Number three, exercise. Exercise grows brain tissue. Number four, expose yourself to nature. All that positive input calms down the inflammation, less brain damage. It may grow tissue back. But the first three has been pretty convincingly shown to grow some tissue back in the brain. You want to hold on to as much brain as you got.
Yeah.
You want to keep it as long as you can, and you want to have as good of a brain, and not only the size of it, but also functionality, right? And just remember, whatever you do, the brain will learn. If you learn to switch, your attention will be in the garbage.
Well, that's why my brain is so big. It's trying to come out of my ears because I exercise.
I see it sticking out.
Yeah. I definitely need more sleep, that's for sure. Doctor, it's been a real pleasure having you here on the show. Really appreciate it. Once again, I want everyone to go grab the book. We'll have it linked up in our description. It's called Digital Brain Rot, Doom Scrolling, Get Your Brain Back by Dr. Eugene Lipoff. Doctor, great to have you here on the show. Really appreciate it.
Great to be on the show.